How is Detroit being affected by the events in Japan?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Jeremy Hobson. Toyota, Honda, and Nissan are just some of the companies that have had to suspend production because of the disaster in Japan. And the industry research firm IHS Automotive now says auto companies here in the U.S. will really start feeling parts shortages next month. Let's continue our coverage of how Japan's disaster is affecting the economy with Michelle Krebs, senior analyst at Edmunds.com. She's with us from Detroit. Good morning.
Good morning.
Give us a sense of what's actually going on where you are.
At the moment, there's no big changes. We aren't seeing massive shutdowns of plants, but we are seeing automakers scramble to find where they might be vulnerable, what part might be made in Japan that could slow or shut down their production here. For instance, Ford telling its dealers not to order a certain color because the pigment comes from Japan. But I think in the next month, we may start seeing some plant shutdowns because of parts shortages.
And how difficult, Michelle, is it for companies to simply adjust the supply chain a bit and get their parts from other places?
Well, it's very difficult because there are a couple things at play. First of all, the supply chain these days is global, whereas, you know, 20, 30 years ago, it was not. The other thing that has changed is most manufacturers operate on a just-in-time delivery system. So they don't have warehouses full of parts. They only build that number of parts for the vehicles and have them delivered to the factory. So that means a glitch could shut down the assembly line.
Michelle Krebs, senior analyst at Edmunds.com. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Now to a class of hedge funds that would like to make money by predicting unforeseen events like the earthquake in Japan or the collapse of the housing market here in the U.S. Marketplace's Jennifer Collins reports it's a growing business.
They're called black swan funds. Their managers look for things that are unlikely to happen, you know, like the chance of crossing paths with a black swan. Investment advisor John Sakowitz says potential payouts are huge, so they bet like a whole different animal.
They have that kind of shark-like olfactory sense.
Mick Swartz teaches finance at the University of Southern California. He says they're more risky than the usual hedge fund. Black swan funds bet on things that are outlandish.
You know, like the price of palladium might double in a year.
Or world markets might collapse. London investment firm 36 South Capital Advisors saw one of its black swans gain more than 200% during the financial crisis. Now the firm announced it will start a new fund. Chris Whalen with Institutional Risk Analytics says, save your money.
I think the whole concept is suspect.
After all, it usually takes quite a while to collect on the bets that black swan funds make, if at all. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
And let's do the numbers. Stocks are up across the globe, but not shares of Research in Motion. The company is losing ground to Apple in its smartphone business and is cutting sales expectations just a month before the launch of its tablet computer. On Wall Street yesterday, the Dow added 84 points to close at 12,170.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Ally Bank, offering its Raise Your Rate CD as well as online savings account and money market account. Learn more at allybank.com. By Chevrolet, maker of the new Volt, which plugs in anywhere and goes everywhere. Available in select markets. Details at chevyvolt.com. And by Reputation.com, monitoring, protecting, and improving reputations online while deleting personal data from the internet. Reputation.com.
AirTran and Southwest Airlines are waiting for clearance from the Justice Department for their merger after AirTran shareholders gave it the okay earlier this week. But the big task remains, making these two very different companies into one. Think of Southwest as the Hawaiian shirt of the airline industry, comfortable, familiar, and AirTran as the Sears suit, businesslike, affordable, no frills. From WABE in Atlanta, Jim Burris reports on the efforts to coordinate that outfit.
Well, hello, everybody. Come in and sit down. Put your seat belt on.
On this recent flight out of Dallas, Captain Mad Dog Watson greets passengers just like he always does.
Well, hello, folks. Now that I have your attention, let me introduce myself. Captain Mad Dog Watson here.
Just another Southwest pilot? Nope. Mad Dog flies for AirTran. Bob Fornaro is that company's CEO. He says the two airlines' cultures are already a lot alike.
The key thing is, I think the attitudes are similar in terms of the way we focus on the customer. And that's the most important.
Fornaro is right. Good customer service is a key goal at both airlines. But it's a poorly kept secret that at Southwest, customers actually come second. Employees come first, explains Cheryl Huey, Southwest Director of Culture Services.
We know if we're doing the right thing for our employees, that ultimately it'll be the right thing for our business, which ultimately is the right thing for our customers.
Southwest generally pays its employees better. It's not facing contentious labor disputes like AirTran. And in the most turbulent economic times, Southwest still makes money. But Southwest CEO Gary Kelly says his airline can still pick up a few pointers from AirTran.
We want to be very measured about any radical changes that we're contemplating, because what they've got works pretty darn good.
AirTran flies its planes more full, more often, and with less overhead than Southwest. All things Kelly says his airline needs to do better in order to grow.
This is a great opportunity for us to do great things for our culture, for our business, to grow Southwest Airlines, and in places that I don't think we could otherwise access.
Southwest will instantly add Caribbean destinations once it acquires AirTran, but Mexico and Canada could soon be on the horizon. In Atlanta, I'm Jim Burris for Marketplace.
And finally to New York City, where a man is auctioning off his 212 area code phone number. He tells the New York Daily News whoever buys it will be able to avoid the humiliation of a 347 or a 646 area code, which he warns might make them look like they just moved to New York. The asking price, by the way, $1 million. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. And this is APM, American Public Media.
Are you a klutz in the kitchen? Have you ever wondered what the heck is a brunoise anyway? Chef Zadi can change that for cheap at his new cooking school.
Brunoise is supposed to be 1/8 of an inch. It's a little square.
I'm Kai Rizdal, serving up a culinary school that costs way less than Le Cordon Bleu. That's next time on Marketplace from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.